Wondering if you should stay in Illinois or move out of state? Get your copy of Scott Tucker's book, Escape Illinois, Should I Stay or Should I Go? Get your complimentary copy at retirementdakota.com.
Investment advisory services are made available through AE Wealth Management, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
I'm just scrolling through a bunch of stuff. I'm actually looking at the hardcover book of the American Revolution, An Intimate History, based on the film series by Ken Burns, Sarah Botstein, and David Schmidt, Jeffrey Ward, and Ken Burns, all on the cover of this book. Jeffrey Ward's about to join us, but this is the companion piece to that American Revolution series that many of you have watched, and if you haven't, you should, and if you have, you'll also really enjoy this book. Not only is it interesting to read, but it's one of the most beautiful books I've ever had. The curation of the photos in it, literally the stock of paper they've used in this oversized coffee table book, they don't make them like this anymore. I'm glad that the book itself got the treatment that the subject deserves. We talked to Jeffrey Ward after this on WGN. The American Revolution, An Intimate History. Jeffrey Ward joins us now, the author along with Ken Burns. Jeff, welcome back to the show. You're on WGN Radio in Chicago. How are you?
I'm fine. I have a slight flu, so if my voice sounds funny, I apologize, but I'm otherwise fine.
Well, I appreciate you working for us today. You're not alone in that getting of the flu. I hope you feel better soon, and congratulations on the book. It's just positively lovely. It's also fascinating, but it's just a beautiful document about the Revolutionary War.
Well, thanks so much. I heard your very generous introduction a while ago. It means a lot to me that you like the look of it, because I spent a lot of time on images. It does have an extraordinary, I think, collection of illustrations, both vintage ones from the actual period and what we thought things looked like over the two centuries afterwards. And it's a sort of record of both the revolution and how we thought about the revolution.
What do you mean
by
that?
So I'm very grateful that you like it.
Yeah, what do you mean by that?
There was an enormous amount of glorification after the war, with paintings which are they're meant to be sort of storytelling historical monuments themselves, and some of them are accurate and some of them are not, and they tell us a lot about what people wanted to believe about the war. And I tried in the captions, which are sometimes very wordy, to explain what's real and what isn't. What's exaggerated and what's left out. And I just found that a fascinating exercise.
Maybe you can expand on that, because I think you're getting to what the New York Times noticed in their review of the book on Sunday. They said, Ward and Burns, you and Ken Burns, are right to believe that the moment is favorable for a reappraisal. They wrote, we now know more about the revolution's violence and the equally lethal effects of disease, especially smallpox. As Ward writes, the virus that had scarred, blinded, or killed hundreds of thousands of Native Americans now ravaged both the British and the American armies. But it's not just that. It's really about, as you just said, some of the things we believe about the revolution, but also some of the awfulness of that time. And you guys don't spare us that in your book.
No, we tried to give as, first of all, it's a war. Wars are always awful. We've done the Civil War, and we did a history of the Second World War, and we did a book and series about Vietnam. And this one is no less ghastly on that level. It is, and I think I certainly learned a lot doing this. I didn't realize how deep the divisions were in the colonies. So working on something like this makes you do sort of ancestral archaeology. You can't help it. And I discovered that my own family had a continental general named, with the wonderful name, Epaphroditus Champion, who took cattle and sheep to Valley Forge during that terrible winter. But I'm also descended from Lieutenant John Ward, who, the moment the fighting started, joined a Tory regiment, fought his way all through the war against the rebellion, and ended up in Canada. So, and that's just one family, but there are lots of them.
Well,
in some ways, it's as much a civil war as the Civil War was.
Yeah. Well, you point out that Benjamin Franklin's son was on, at least, was on the other side, wasn't he?
He certainly was. He was the governor of New Jersey. He was arrested and imprisoned and let go, and then led a sort of terrorist Tory outfit for the rest of the war.
Think about that. Benjamin Franklin's son fought for the other side. And you and Ken Burns suggest that as many as 1 in 5 Americans were not in favor of the war. And when you think about it, if you are part of the greatest nation on earth, you don't like how you're being treated, but you're just this ragtag group of colonies. Do you really want to, is it that bad that you want to cut that thing off? And do you have any expectation that you can win? And there are passages.
That's exactly right.
And there are passages in the book when you describe the number of Hessian soldiers and British soldiers that were arriving, the number of cannons, the number of boats, and to think that we could defeat that. We know how this story ends, but what gumption the Americans had to think that they could take that force on.
It says, if there's one thing you learn in writing history, it's that nothing is inevitable. That nobody knows what's going to happen next Tuesday. You don't know what's going to happen next Tuesday, and neither do I, and neither did George Washington. So it's a real struggle, and from month to month, week to week, you're not at all sure which side is going to win. And it did look impossible at the beginning.
Some of the conditions in which they lived and fought, too, maybe modern warfare. I don't know, maybe the Vietnam War, maybe World War II. Maybe those are the images you have in your mind of just how awful the carnage can be. World War I, for sure. But the Revolutionary War was sometimes fought in the mud by guys who did not have good shoes. And I wanted you to comment on the bayonet as a weapon of war in just a minute. We're talking with Jeffrey Ward, who, along with Ken Burns, wrote The American Revolution, An Intimate History. It's the big, thick, hardbound, coffee table-sized book that goes with the PBS docuseries, and it's just fascinating. We'll pick it up here in a minute on WGN. Chicago's very own Jeffrey Ward joins us. We're talking about the book that he has written along with Ken Burns, The American Revolution. I didn't realize you were a Southside guy. Is that right, Jeffrey?
5321 South Greenwood. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And you're mentioning the cold. In that commercial made me remember how very, very cold Chicago can be.
Yeah, we've got a little bit of that here. Here's your wiki. Born in Newark, Ohio in 1940, grew up on the south side of Chicago and in New Delhi, India. A lot of people don't say that. He graduated from Oberlin College in 62 with a degree in studio art. And then you worked for Encyclopedia Britannica here in Chicago, as well as Audience and American Heritage magazines, and you had a Life and Times column for American Heritage. And then you are the author of, I think, the way a lot of us have learned history, the Civil War series, Empire of the Air, The Men Who Made Radio, Baseball, Thomas Jefferson, Jazz, the Vietnam War, the Roosevelts. None of these topics without ardent students or fans or controversies. Which was the most difficult to parse the truth, or maybe what America should hear? How difficult are these topics to tackle, Jeffrey?
Well, they're all tough in their way. I found every one of them fascinating, and I learned a lot doing them. The question of, you know, what you include and what you don't, we just try to tell stories. But we want to include in those stories everybody who was actually included in the events. And that is sometimes complicated only because other people haven't traditionally done it. So that you have to work a little harder. But I just find trying to write history in which the participants don't know what's going to happen next. Makes for very good storytelling.
Yeah. Well, I was interested in how much time you spoke about the loyalists to the crown who were living in the United States in the colonies, the Hessians, the Native Americans, the Indians of the time. We didn't sure talk about those in my history classes, and you all spend a lot of time talking about who they were fighting for, how they were treated, what their circumstances were, the Black Americans, the enslaved people who fought for both sides, by the way, and were sometimes right. then duped with pledges for citizenship or freedom, and that was not afforded them at all. You also talk about just the physical nature of the combat, the conditions in which these people lived and also fought. And they did not have the conveniences of modern warfare. War is always awful, but these guys were sometimes barefoot in the mud, in the rain, waiting to march the next day, wondering where they were going to find food. And the bayonet, can you just talk a little bit about how that was used, how the fighting actually took place?
Sure. The bayonet was the weapon that struck the most fear in the people the British called the rebels in those days. You can imagine just a wall of steel coming at you, and when it gets to you, it's going to tear you in pieces. And you get one volley to fire at it, at the British coming toward you, and then you are at the mercy of those blades. And it took a while. Sort of the display of them made farmers and so on run away at the beginning. But the Americans learned both how to wield bayonets and how to fight them. And it was the sort of secret weapon at the beginning of the war, but by the middle of it, it was just another weapon.
Were the colonists that were fighting, though, they their whole lives had lived as British subjects, as British citizens.
Absolutely.
So what was it that turned the tide?
Well, the first impulse of the rebellion was to restore rights that they thought they had as Englishmen. They didn't understand the English Constitution allowed a certain amount of democracy and a certain amount of parliamentary government, and they had no voice in it. And when the British decided to impose what was in effect a very small tax on them and was going to station troops here, in part to just to keep the white settlers from fighting the Indians. That was seen by a lot of people as denial of British rights, and initially that's what they were fighting for, and they kept paying, paying tribute to the king, and seeing. As their champion at first, and that Parliament was the villain, and it took Thomas Paine to turn that language, to turn the cause really against the king himself, and that was a great turning point when the Declaration of Independence was declared. But initially, and toward the end of the war, when the French had joined it, and it suddenly became a global war, and the British were on their heels, they sent a committee, wonderfully called the Committee for Quieting Disorders, here to try to offer, in effect, everything that the Americans had asked for before the Declaration of Independence. They might even have had representation in Parliament, and by then it was far too late. Continental Congress sent them scuttling off to New York, where they took sanctuary.
I don't know if it was that scene you're talking about, but there's a passage in the book where you write about, again, Ben Franklin and two others met with the British to see if they could resolve it, and they said, it's just too late now.
It's too late. That's right. That was just before the terrible Battle of Brooklyn.
Yeah, which you write about in great detail. Jeffrey, we are out of time. I would love it if you came to Chicago sometime, maybe to visit the old stomping ground or any family you have here, but we'd love to host you in our studio. We appreciate you on the phone today, and Thanks for a work well done, the American Revolution.
Well, thank you for being so enthusiastic about it. I'm very grateful. Bye-bye.
That's Jeffrey Ward, who couldn't be on with us last week. He said he was ill. He said, I want to come on today. And he made a yeoman's effort there. We appreciate that.